If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Stuff.biz.
All right. Welcome, everyone. The final show of this year of Sven's vacation.
Oh, let's just make it the final show of the year.
Oh, dude, that would be freaking great.
Don't take
to work
vacation
anymore this year.
Yeah.
But I'm here with Alex, and the disembodied voice this episode is James Carlson in the background. How are you?
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So, before we start talking about YIMBYs and NIMBYs, I want to pick up where we left off last show, talking about the Montgomery Brawl.
Oh, and yeah.
We now have just other random attacks of black people just, like, attacking people with folding chairs. This is now a thing. There was an attack in Detroit where some nigger just beat the crap out of a white guy with a folding chair. And, of course, he hit him over the, this one looked like it was a metal one. He hit him over the head with it. The guy went down clearly unconscious and continued to beat him with it. And you don't see the whole video. I'll see if I can find it. You don't see the whole video, of course. And niggers are framing it. The niggers that are celebrating it, because, of course, they're openly celebrating it. They are framing it as if this is like some, like, again, another heroic defense against, you know, another heroic black defends themselves against white supremacists. And I also saw an article in NPR this morning by a black columnist who was celebrating and talking about how he was tired of white people in his life asking him to explain essentially why black Twitter was like being so violent and celebratory over this. And he said he posted a meme which showed MLK holding a folding chair.
And he, yeah, I got the Detroit video. I put it in the chat.
Okay, great, great. He, you know, he thought this was absolutely hilarious. And, you know, white people that, you know, lip-tarded white people in his life were, like, horrified by this idea that MLK could be violent. But he was like, I just don't feel like I need to explain this. Anyway, let's watch the Detroit video. This can take a second. So here we have, let's repeat a few times. So, yeah, so they're just, yeah, so it's obvious to me from watching this video, we're going to do, like, video analysis here, that this white guy is being harassed by several blacks. Like, the idea that they were defending themselves is absurd, because if you look at the beginning, here it is, there's kind of unclear, but back here in this area where the scuffle is going on, there's, like, three black guys that aren't hitting him with the chair, and there he is. He's about to get hit with the chair, and there he's kind of defending himself. Now he goes down. And the blacks are yelling at him, you're going to get fucked up. So, and look at this. This is very funny. Twitter did a, look at this in the upper right. Relevant people, Tariq Nasheed. That's in the upper right hand corner to this tweet. Relevant people. Oh, it's Tariq Nasheed's tweet. Okay. My bad.
But yeah, Black saying, August energy. What a twat.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that's just something they made up now. Like, Black August energy is just fake. But look, all these niggers love it, right? They think it's hilarious. And blacks are just going to... And now these blacks are memeing themselves. Blacks are memeing themselves, like, you know, just walking around with chairs. And they're selling T-shirts in the chair. This is and basically this is effectively this is a form of stochastic terrorism, because black people actually feel justified in just beating white people with folding chairs. And this is exactly what this nigger at NPR is talking about when he says this: I spent my career explaining race, but hit a wall with Montgomery brawl meme. So he doesn't feel like he needs to explain to the white libtards in his life. This is the thing, like white libtards, you're never gonna, like, it's never gonna work. You have to stop. It's never gonna work out. So this guy says, when you built a career around explaining race and racism to people, what happens when you find a moment you just don't want to explain? In other words, what you found is a moment of essentially a violent black lynch mob attacking a bunch of white people, a guy like almost murdering a woman with a folding chair, and everybody celebrating it, and you don't feel that you can or should have to explain this to white people, how this works. So they're all, even this intellectual Negro, Eric Deggans, this is what he looks like here. This is him. This is an educated lane brother. This is an educated lane nigga. And he loves it. He loves it. Also, what a stupid, a TV critic, of course. Of course, he's a TV.
Yeah, let me think about the slow effort thing I could do.
Yeah, it's like the low, yeah.
Let me pick the thing they do on Tedious to Fill Time. Talk about TV.
Yeah. So, where does he go? It says, and in moments, Black Twitter jumped to life. I know the social media platform is renamed it, blah, blah. I don't care. So here we got niggers memeing on the chair. That's whatever. But the problem is, niggers are out there just now beating people with chairs. So there are images of people carrying folding chairs like holstered weapons. There was the graphic pointing out that an early design of the folding chair was patented by a black man. Seems to be true. I'm going to press X on that. The Photoshop picture of glowing rings around black folks rushing to the fight, mimicking the climax of Avengers. See, I didn't even know that that's what that was. But that's what that nigger bitch was talking about when we were watching the video last show, where she said this is like Avengers Endgame. And I turned off the audio because I didn't want to listen to their commentary. But the spirited reenactment of the fight around someone's backyard pool amped up the absurd humor of it all. Yeah, the absurd humor. And, you know, I've heard people saying that they've heard people, like, of all the topics, two people have told me they heard people at work discussing this and, like dumbass, like, approval-seeking, like, the type of white libtard that seeks approval from niggers is, like, going along with it and celebrating it. And it's like, I would say to the white liberal woman doing that, well, I understand why you do that. You want the social approval and the clout of being friends with or in with, like, black people who Jewish people present to you as cool, cooler than white men. But they'll hit you over the head with a folding chair, too. You could just as easily have been that white woman hit over the head with a folding chair. So how do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel like you deserve it? Do you feel like you deserve it? I mean, why not hit yourself over the head? Why not just give a nigger in the office a whole folding chair and be like, hit me right now. I deserve it.
And he would, too.
Oh, he will. Yeah, he would do it. Yeah. And he wouldn't get in trouble for it, just the same way folding chair guy Reggie Gray is not getting in trouble. They've arrested three of the white men. Now they've arrested a white woman who was involved. And every nigger is saying that they all said nigger. Every nigger is telling, is like reporting.
It's not a crime.
Well, they want to get them on bias crimes.
Well, yeah, because the media making wants that shit up.
They want
though.
A hate crime enhancement.
Yeah, the media wants it too. The Jew media wants it. And all the niggers are basically, I'm sure, lying and saying that they were all.
They're lying. There's no doubt about it. That's why they're also there. That's like the one thing that they could all be in agreement on. Oh, yeah, they definitely called me a nigger.
Yeah, they know. They don't need to even plot that. They know that's a shelling point. They know to all just lie about that.
Yeah, they know that this is the thing that you do.
Yeah, they know how it all works. They're not stupid. But this is funny. When explaining becomes too much of a burden. Yeah, it's sometimes tiring to always be asked to explain your cultural nuances to the world. But that's,
you know,
the
what's really
a bother for.
You know what's really a bother? Having to constantly explain your high fucking murder rate to the world.
Yeah, having to being I can understand that being a black person trying to explain black people's behavior to white people could get old. I could understand that. And at some point he's like, you know, frankly, here's what happened. Like, niggers saw a fight. Niggers like violence and mischief, so they all jumped in. And we all think it's funny because even as, like, an educated lane nigga for NPR, I still think violence is great and funny. So yeah. I don't feel like you're having to explain that. I'm like, you know what? I'll tell you one thing to this guy, Eric Deggans. Around me, you don't have to explain it. I understand. You don't have to explain to me. I don't need an explanation from you. I understand perfectly well what's going on. What's even funny, though, is that, like, people were, like, angry at him. He said, like, people he knew, and I'm assuming these are, like, white libtards, were, like, angry or upset or didn't get, like, Martin Luther King holding a folding chair. Like, no, Martin Luther King would beat a white person with a folding chair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he absolutely would do that. That's kind of the thing. That he would be into that stuff. He'd have that black energy, that Black August energy.
I mean, that's kind of the lesson from the whole thing, right? Is that no matter what Negro you encounter, they will hit you with a folding chair and they will enjoy it and all their friends will enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. The only nigger that was critical of this was Ock Nation. He's the one I actually got the story about the Detroit chair beating. But yeah, I mean, expect it because they basically told niggers, like, yeah, it's okay to beat up white people. It's like doubly okay if you do it with a folding chair now. Also, they just reacting to memes. Like, they're all on this black social media crap where they're all joking about it. And this guy's like, oh, I've got a folding chair. Here's a white person. I'm just going to hit him. Like, is there any world in which that was a self-defense situation with that white guy? He was surrounded by four niggers. He was clearly trying to get away. Is there any world in which that was self-defense?
No, not at all.
No, none. That was pure assault. And yeah, he was going after him, but that's because he was being attacked with a deadly weapon. He was being beaten with a chair. He's trying to make it stop. And yeah, and one wonders, like, everyone's laughing about that. What condition is that man in? He was clearly knocked unconscious. What's his condition?
He was being beaten on the ground after he'd been given up. The black guy was still swinging.
He was down, which is basically at that point, I think that's automatic attempted murder. And niggers always do that. Niggers love. I've seen them fight so many times. When you're down, that's usually when most of them come and jump in, is once somebody's down. Then they're jumping in to just kick the person while they're down and cause, you know, permanent damage or death. So
yeah, because they're like fucking hyenas or something.
Yeah, they really are. I don't know what else to say.
I really wonder I wonder if we'll get a new, because remember there was the knockout game social media trend. Literally thousands of people in America and Britain and Canada were punched by blacks in the street.
Usually
recording
old
it
for people.
For Twitter and TikTok.
Yeah.
There was some famous Jew got punched in a park in New York City. I don't remember who.
Moranis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was the only one I laughed at.
I'm curious if we're going to get folding chair TikTok assault videos.
Yes, we are. We are going to get niggers assaulting white people with folding chairs for TikTok clout.
Yep, that'll be the next trend.
We already fantastic. It's already happening. I mean, what do you think this Detroit thing was? What do you think this was?
Wait, he was trying to get famous.
Yeah, he was just doing the meme. He was doing the bit. I mean, yeah. And the media is covering it up. They're going to cover it up. And yeah, the knockout game still effectively goes on. Like, you still get niggers just punching random white people and putting it on TikTok and like, loving it, right? So it's still going on. It never really stopped. They just stopped talking about it. And remember, we covered this when it was being talked about in the media. We covered this. And they were simply trying to make it as if the people that were making this an issue... There was a few incidents. People making this an issue are trying to stir up racial trouble, which is always, always how it is presented. That is always how it is presented when white people, like, I mean, look, again, we went over this last time. This is the one time you have white people involved in a brawl in America. And how many black-only brawls or riots or mass shootings or whatever have there been since this happened? And the thing that really pisses me off...
Dozen or so.
Yeah, I mean, who fucking knows? So, this black author is a liar. That's the other thing. He's a liar, and a lot of them are liars. It says, I was blown away by how quickly folks across social media, especially black folks, were converting horror over a narrowly averted racialized beatdown into funny memes celebrating the reflex of blacks to stand up for one another. Especially when faced with danger from white people. No. Black people weren't standing up for one another. They had a chance to get involved in beating up white people. And they were enjoying it.
My brain is like screeching to a halt here.
People stand up for one another when there's a mass shooting on their street and they all know who did it and they refuse to tell the police? Do black people stand up for one another in those circumstances? No.
It looks to me like what black people do is they mob up on each other and then inflict massive casualties on one another. That's what it looks like.
Black people murder each other at astronomical rates, and they don't try to enforce the law in their own communities. They talk a lot of shit. They personally want police to protect them, but then they want the police to also not be there when they're committing crimes, and none of them will cooperate with police to help them catch the murderers that they know are the ones in their neighborhoods, the people that they know. Because as Ock Nation always says, the streets know who did these murders. Because these niggers fucking talk on their bodies, as they say. They talk on their bodies. They tell everyone who they killed. Everyone knows who killed who. All the niggers know it. And the police know that all the niggers know it and won't tell them. And it's frustrating for them. So black people, you don't stand up for each other. That's a lie. You're a liar. And Eric Deggans knows he's lying. He knows he's lying. Black people are fucking dirty and grimy and fucking stab each other literally and figuratively all the time. They don't stand up for one another. The only time this happens is when white people are involved and they can get away with it. Because it's a fact. And they get away with it with each other too. No one gives a fuck when black people kill each other. The system is far more interested in not giving white people any excuse to be racist than they are in, like, stopping black murders. Additionally, black people aren't doing anything to help crime in their neighborhoods. They're fucking contributing to it and collaborating in it and refusing to report people that they know are violent criminals and doing murders in their own neighborhoods. They won't talk on it. And some of it's fear, but some of it's also they just don't want to help the cops. But you can't tell me that they stand up for each other then. You can't. How come you can't take care of the fucking massive murder rate in your own neighborhoods if you stand up for each other, niggers? So I don't want to hear this shit, Eric Deggans. This shit pisses me off, man. This mass level constant fucking hypocritical bullshit pisses me off. And white people that join in on this for clout or because they're fucking libtards and they think it's cool to be down with blacks, you make me fucking sick. And you make yourself sick too. And you know you do. And you know you're liars. All of you know you're lying. All of you are lying. This is the only show that doesn't lie to you. We don't lie to you here. Niggers are violent. They enjoy violence. They like violence. And they have no solidarity with each other. They murder each other at massive rates. That's the fucking truth. And you know.
I did a quick look. There 7 deaths and 22 injuries in mass shootings just since the riverboat
There you go.
Incident.
So where's this reflex to stand up for each other? More like the reflex is to see if niggers are fucking lacking and shoot them in the face. That's the reflex. Yeah.
Yeah, they're already doing to me.
The slightest dispute turns into bullets flying in their community.
This is what was amazing about this Montgomery brawl. They argued for many, many minutes before there was a shove. Before the white guy shoved.
There wasn't a shot. I mean, I expected one of them fat Dindwishes to come down the ramp firing.
I'm surprised that no one was shot, too. I'm actually surprised that no one was shot. Blacks?
They pull guns out of their purses like they're freaking candy. And fire into the crowd haphazardly.
Yeah, they do. And I'm surprised that didn't happen here. And if it had, they wouldn't have gotten in trouble.
No, the same 3 white guys would have still been arrested, assuming
they
didn't
die. Or
they
would have been dead and it would have been fine. It would have been considered justified. Yeah. I mean, because they're right now saying they just want to talk to this guy, Reggie Gray. Well, they know who he is. They know how to find him. Just go arrest him. He's not going to turn himself in. Niggers don't do that. The white people did.
This article is pretty infuriating. So they've got the memes in here because now they're doing folding chair memes, which means it's already going to take off. Like you're going to start seeing beatings.
There's
going to
be multiple beatdowns of white people with folding chairs. It's inevitable. Yeah. Lots of them are going to be women. Many of them are going to be women, and it's going to be covered up by the media.
His reticence at having to explain this to people, it's like, it's because this is about brutalizing somebody with a folding chair. It's inherently
right, because what really is going on is that niggers were celebrating somebody getting brutalized, some an innocent woman getting her head beaten in with a chair, and niggers like that.
Yeah, because they're animals and they fucking think it's funny.
And that's
they're like a bunch of orcs.
Thing for you to fucking explain. No, that's hard. That's difficult for you to explain. I understand that, but that's not my problem. That you can't explain that shit.
But that's my thing with the with all the white people who seem to be enjoying it. That was an older woman backed up against a boat who got hit over the head with a chair. What if that's your grandma, your mother?
Yeah.
I mean, really? You really think it's that funny?
Well, my grandma's like my sister.
Again, the couple anecdotes I heard of this were from New York. One of them said it was like, you know, some kind of like some kind of like Uyghurish presenting white dude was joking about it with like, with not with blacks, but with like beaners at a bar. And then one other guy said some lip-tarded woman was seeking clout from like a black woman at his office. And I was like, yeah, he's like, I was sick. I almost wanted to walk out. I was like, you should have just fucking called her out on it. So like, you really think it's funny that woman almost got killed? You think that's funny? That shove wasn't going to do shit to that black captain. It was just a shove. You can say he shouldn't have done it, but, like, you know what? Fuck you. I don't care. Maybe he was provoked. You know, if it's okay to, like, fucking kill white people because you say that they said nigger, then it's fine for that white guy to have shoved that captain for fucking with his boat. Fuck off.
Well, but this is another thing, right? Right. So everyone just assumes that the white people said nigger, even if they didn't. They probably didn't. Let's all be honest. They probably didn't. But I guarantee you, I'd bet $100 every single one of those black people was shouting anti-white slurs.
Oh, yeah, they were.
The whole time.
Oh, yeah, no,
the whole time.
No question. They were all talking about beating down whitey. Every single one, yeah. Absolutely. There's no question. And they always
beat your ass, crack. I mean, you can hear it in your head. You know exactly
how
they
always
do. You know what they're going to say.
Well, there was some of the video, I couldn't find it again, where the audio wasn't filtered out. And, yeah, they're all screaming about that shit. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Complete inversion of reality, and you have libtards scrambling to be to
collaborate
cool
with it
because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, actually, entirely believable, which is the disappointing part.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's believable. But I don't want to overestimate, like, the amount of libtard, like, collaboration here. This is, like, two anecdotes from New York, which is, like, notorious for white people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But,
most people are going to be disgusted by this.
Or they're just not going to want to talk about it. They're just not going to want to talk about it. Or they're not going to think, or, you know, they're not going to know about it or whatever. But, yeah, but the fact that this is what is being encouraged, I mean, this is a form. White people are living under a regime of stochastic terrorism, where violence against them is encouraged and then not punished by the state when it happens. And so, like, the blatant racial double standard here is so monumentally, insanely out of this world that it's almost like impossible to even fathom that they could get away with it.
Well, that's why I'm kind of surprised the media is making such a big deal, because the article I read yesterday, some black author, he said, if you've been living under a rock, you'll be the only person who hasn't heard of this. I'm like, why are you? I'm amazed that this is such a big deal on even on mainstream media, just because it's so disgusting.
They jump at any chance. Like, the media jumps at any chance for a white person to be the bad guy. And the thing is, the reason is because it's so rare, and they can't stop themselves. They can't help themselves. Like, they saw that the white guy shoved the black guy, apparently is the first punch or whatever in this altercation, and they cannot stop themselves. They are so eager for this. I mean, how much carnage have niggers caused before, in the days before and after this, that is like so much more significant than anything that happened here? And it's just not a story. And this is how they create this sort of false consciousness in people. But I don't believe that people's false consciousness about this is so extreme that they actually think what Ilhan Omar said a couple of weeks ago, which is like, white men are the ones that are doing all the murders and death in America. Yeah.
Fuck. Get out.
Yeah, she said that in some interview.
What?
Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah. No, she said that, like, white men are the ones that are causing the most violence in America. something like that. I could easily find it. Find the whatever the video of it. But yes, she said that. But like nobody believes that. I mean, she might believe it. She might be dumb enough to believe it because that's what they tell her. Like that's what like all the congressional briefings and shit say. And she just doesn't know any better. But I don't believe that any nigger doesn't know that black people are like significantly violent. I'm like, why are you here and not in Somalia?
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country because they're actually causing most of the deaths within this country. So first of all, you've got like a sub room temperature IQ. I mean, how many times did she use country in that sentence? But white, I mean, what kind of accounting or scheme does this make any sense to make that kind of claim? Like, I'm actually trying to think, like, how would this work?
Now, I could see a libtard from the old school from 20 years ago saying white men are causing most of the death when they're talking about like George W. Bush starting the Iraq war or something, right? She doesn't even have that excuse because she says in this country. Now, the only way you could justify that would be if you were like, yes, because they're the ones that are like letting niggers get away with this.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like that's the only way you could possibly. But that's not what she's saying.
That would work. Yeah.
That's not what she's doing, though. I mean, she's just lying or she's dumb or both. I think she's both dumb and lying. I mean, yeah,
I like how the replies to this, right? This is how retarded the conversation is in this country. So basically everybody's like, oh, she's being racist. It's like,
no, she's lying.
Sure, but she's being factually wrong, though, and you're not calling her out for being factually wrong. Like,
right.
The rebuttal is, no, it's blacks.
Yeah,
but calling her out for being factually wrong would make you the racist.
Right. I mean, that's why Republicans aren't going to do that. Like, good luck getting a Republican to tell you that black people are committing all the crime and all the murders. Good luck.
They will, except they immediately follow it with, and no one wants to talk about it, and they're just letting the black community suffer. I mean, they follow it with this sort of trifle about how policy
publicly, they really don't
letting them suffer.
Well, they'll say that what they'll do is they'll say that, like, crime is really bad, that we're like, undermining our police, and blacks are suffering the most.
Yes, yes. That's
but they're not going to,
that's
but
more
of course,
accurate, yes.
But they don't ever say black people are the ones doing it.
Yes.
They'll say it privately. Dude, they'll say nigger privately.
Everyone will. Except for the most libtarded.
Well, there's a lot of people that won't, but like most younger white guys will say nigger in private if they think no one's listening. It's just true. I'm sorry for blowing the lid off this, but it's true.
I can confirm.
And everyone thinks it's funny.
As a younger white guy.
Everybody thinks it's funny. And yes, everyone also understands. I mean, think about this. This is like the most, this is like, in our society, this is the top law. This is the number one law. Don't say nigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no higher law. Yeah. Like, you can murder people. And as long as you don't say nigger, it's like, whatever. You know? Like, saying nigger was worse in the minds of everybody. If those white people had said nigger, that's almost even worse than the shove. Shove's just a shove. Nigger is forever. But I don't believe those white people did say nigger. If they had, I would still stick up for them. I would defend them.
Absolutely.
They have every right to say nigger.
You're literally being assaulted. Of course, I'd be shouting it the whole damn time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my thing is, if I ever got in an altercation with blacks, like, one of the reasons I probably wouldn't is because, like, I don't need to spend the rest of my life in prison. I'm already, you know.
Yeah.
Even if I was being, like, assaulted by them and I wasn't even defending myself. If you say nigger, it's like, well, now you're going to jail for hurting their fists.
Well, yeah, we'd never be able to get you out of whatever hole they throw you in, Mike.
No. And I'm just saying, like, I mean, this is such a monstrous. It's so monstrous. Like, it's so unbelievably. It's so false, and it's such a lie, and it's so enormous that it's like people live with it because they don't see any other option. And then you get stupid women and stupid men too. I'm not blaming only women here because. But I got two anecdotes. One was a man, one was a woman, who were participating in celebrating this shit to try and impress, like, people of color. And, of course, it was in New York. It's pathetic. And you know what's funny? Like Clint Eastwood said in Gran Torino, these guys don't want to be your friends, and I don't blame them. Like, he was right. They don't want to be your friend, and I don't blame them. I don't want to be your friend. Like, they don't respect you. They don't think you're cool. You look like a fucking chump when you do that shit. You look like a try-hard, cringy libtard. Okay? Yeah. And you kind of know.
Oh, yeah, they respect you less.
Oh, they respect you totally less.
They respect you. They respect you less for throwing. I mean, this is the thing.
You look so bad.
Blacks don't like whites. We all know this, but they also really don't like someone who has.
Oh, they hate white allies more than racists.
They have no respect for someone with no self respect. And you're demonstrating you have no self respect by butting up. Did you see that thing in Alabama? Huh? No, they hate you even more.
Or they just think you're fucking cringy. They just think, and they think you're annoying and cringy, and they don't want.
Yeah, well, and the culture in general in the United States teaches you that the white people are dorks,
are cringy. Yeah,
they're not cool. If you're black, you're way more interesting, more cool than a white person. So you're the low man on the totem pole, regardless of whatever other peripheral stuff is going on at the time. Your always default position is to be less popular and considered uncool.
And you don't get to climb that totem pole by like. Celebrating white people getting beaten.
No, you just look pathetic.
Now you actually look, everyone thinks you're pathetic and lame. And like, why? Like, why this, of all things, for you to be, like, why?
And to be honest, like, being something of a racist or a Nazi at least gives you, like, the evil villain factor.
Oh, yeah, no, they will actually think that you're cool on some level.
It's because it's meme culture. That's why. Like, someone getting assaulted with a folding chair is essentially prime meme content, and it becomes the sort of meme culture bullshit that permeates over everything. That's why it's so cool.
Are talking about, right? Yeah, but again, like that even that meme culture is effectively controlled by the mainstream narratives, by the Jewish narratives.
Meme culture is so fucking gay.
It's really gay.
Memes were a mistake.
What
I hate about memes? Do you know what I hate about memes? Memes allows an uncreative, stupid person to repost and copy something and then feel good about themselves because of their upvotes and their likes.
That's why Black Twitter does so well.
Right? So
when explaining becomes too much of a burden, he says, okay, let's read further. Sometimes to be asked to explain your cultural nuances to the world. Yeah, it's not really very nuanced, but that's a gig I signed up for many years ago when I decided to write about race and media regularly. Because the guy's not just a TV critic. He injects anti-white narratives into all of his TV criticism. Yeah, and yes, all the social media joking was hiding a fear that today's political climate has left racists emboldened to attack a black man in broad daylight for doing his job. Well, you have no evidence. Not to play the conservative card, you have no evidence that was a racial attack. The guy was fucking with their boat. Maybe he shouldn't have fucked with their boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah. So, and also, racists are far more restrained than niggers. If that was a nigger's boat, somebody would have been shot. Imagine if those were blacks. If those were blacks on another boat, and he moved the boat, there would have been an all-out brawl between blacks and black woman, the swimmer. He probably would have figured out how to swim in that case too. It's just that the media would have, or for whatever reason, a bunch of niggers partying on that dock just got into a big brawl because that happens. I mean, look, this altercation, this thing happened before the niggers could just do it to themselves. What do you have, like a couple hundred niggers there? That's easily enough to have a gathering incident. You know, so explaining the memes only resurfaced those darker feelings in ways I wasn't quite ready to process. Shut the fuck up. Just shut up. This is, you know what it is? This is also no black people are reading this. This is written for the kind of white libtards that like read NPR and to make it somehow like acceptable for them. And it's just and then the person reading this. You know, it's so funny, all the shit that is by blacks or supposedly by blacks, by black avatars, that is written for white liberals, like, I'm exhausted. Oh, God, I need to do self-care. Like, you get these frizzy-haired mulattoes, like, writing this kind of shit for these libertarded publications that only these white liberal people are reading. And it's like, oh, and it becomes exhausting to have to deal with, like, and it's all, like, all of it is essentially attacking the white ally.
Let's do some bias confirmation. You talked about what would happen if blacks were, if it was black on black, if it was a black dispute between blacks over boat.
Yeah,
sure, from one day ago.
Yeah,
from one day ago, we've got one. Man found fatally shot on boat launch at Oakland Regional Shoreline Tuesday. Authorities in Oakland are investigating a shooting that left a man dead at a boat launch in the Martin Luther King Jr. Regional Shoreline.
There you go.
I'm not going to bother to look up the ethnicity of who was involved, given the location.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that.
I don't need to.
Also, niggers are on boats these days. I know a lot of people meme that, like, niggers in boats are, like, oil and water, but no. Niggers
I mean,
on boats.
They're all I didn't know
boats.
There
they
was
They don't
a,
swim, but they're on boats.
I didn't know there was a Martin Luther King Jr. regional shoreline, but
I'm
I
sure
would
there's
rather
more
go
than
to
one.
I'm sure there's a fucking one. Shark beach any
what
day
state,
of the week.
What state
like,
is this again?
California.
Oh, okay.
Oakland.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
somebody
can,
probably,
can I get this?
Somebody probably tried to move someone's boat. Gotcha.
Can I get this author? Well, yeah, because it's at the boat ramp. So anyway, can I get this author to explain to me the association between Martin Luther King Jr. locations and shootings?
I think he's exhausted trying to explain that to you. Listen,
there was a
I get exhausted explaining these cultural nuances, okay?
But you know, these exhausted, these words are also sort of late millennial, early zoomer meme culture too.
Yes.
These are meme culture words. I can open my phone right now and open TikTok, and I guarantee you I'll see something about someone being exhausted. It's
exactly.
All the same freaking thing.
Yes. Yes. All of this shit, this is also the, frankly, a lot of this stuff is targeted at white women. Because it's also the kind of shit that, like, women say, oh, I'm so tired, I'm exhausted, man. Oh, yeah.
Tarpsome.
But yes, that all of that shit, you're exactly right. Like, this is, but it's not authentic because they describe the kinds of feelings and anxieties that white people typically have. And then black people are, like, saying, and they're basically, all that shit is an attack, as I was saying. All those kinds of articles, and we've read many of them on this show, those are all effectively, like, attacks on white allies. Because they're not actually talking about, like, people like us, like the evil, actual, just open racists, right? What they're talking about is the exhaustion of dealing with the perpetually, like, head in the clouds, stupid, like, white ally who's obviously only doing their allyship in a phony search for clout, doesn't really feel it, and still has all kinds of racist feelings internally. And so what that does is that puts that white ally in a perpetual position of inferiority. Always, 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 forever. And
I have
this,
lots of racist feelings externally, like all the time.
Right. Well, that's the thing. They know that none of this shit is going to work on us because we're also just going to say, yeah, fuck you. You're not exhausted. You're exhausted because you just don't like working. It's lazy. I'm lazy too, don't get me wrong. But like,
you're exhausted because you're dodging gunfire all day from your fellow niggers.
Yeah, you're exhausted. I mean, it's far more exhausting living around niggers than white people. I mean, if the other thing is, also the obvious thing is, if you're so exhausted, white people, just go away. Just go away.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, white people will not seek you out. This is another thing that blacks say, because they see this behavior of white people trying to be cool and like hang out around them in situations where they're in mixed company, like in an office or at a workplace or something like that. It's like, yes, that's true. But when that's not the case, even white lips, they're not seeking niggers out. They don't. If they're in a situation where everyone's white, they'll just accept that and just go forward, press forward. They don't like seek them out. And so this idea, and also the other lie that, yeah, that white people want to touch your hair, though, that's just made up. That doesn't happen. That's all fake.
Nobody wants to touch your hair. That's
never happened. Everybody lies about that. No one wants to touch your hair because you don't want to get, like, greasy Jerry curl on their hand. But, but yes, this is all, and you know, this is what makes me so sick about, and you know, the funny thing is Stryker was saying this, that actually this persistent culture of abuse of white allies, of libtarded, like, race conscious BLM supporters, white allies and such, this persists, and the trannies do this too. The trannies engage in exactly this same power dynamic with their white heterosexual allies. Libtards are just eternal punching bags for everybody. That's what's so funny. The fact is, though, that actually has started to get to them. And it's making, like, fewer people be like that. And so there's now this new thing they're trying to do. And this has to do with what we were talking about with the Democratic Party is now trying to make some kind of actual racial appeal to whites. And they're trying to come up with what the messaging is going to be. And Stryker was saying he's seen increasing messaging around Antifa circles for white people, something like they're like accomplices, not allies. So to make white people like more equal, as if it's good for you too. It's good for everybody. This racial equality struggle is good for everybody. And white people are actually equals in this struggle. They're not just like subordinates to people of color anymore. They're trying to get this off the ground. The problem is blacks aren't going to go for that. And to some extent, Jews aren't going to go for it. Because there's already fierce pushback.
You can't recondition the multiracial coalition.
Right, right.
You can't recondition them.
You can't give an olive branch to whites. Because as soon as you do, because that's what it is. Like Jews, like there are some Jews that are trying to stabilize the situation because they understand white people either, you know, like just checking out increasingly. Because we're saying Antifa has been decimated in recent years. They're gone. They're effectively gone. They're not effective anymore. They don't come out to anything. They don't organize anything effectively. They don't even really try and do like Twitter or call-in camp. I mean, it's just totally – now, there's been a number of reasons for that, including lawsuits and things like that. But they're gone. And part of this is because white people just checked out because of the consistent – it's just the never-ending racial abuse that they face and the never-ending mockery and putting them on like the low end of the totem pole. I mean, you know, the progressive stack, all that shit. Like at some point, people just get fed up with it. I mean, Alex and I used to know a guy. Doesn't matter what his name is. You know who I'm talking about, who was a big anarchist and eventually just came over to being a white nationalist because he suffered so much racial abuse in those circles. And he used to hate us. He hated us. Oh man, God, he fucking hated us deeply. But now he's a fan. And I like him. I'm like, great. I always, first of all, I was always a secret fan because that guy was always fucking funny as hell. Like
his posts, he was funny.
His posts were hilarious, even when I deeply disagreed with him ideologically. But now I'm like, yeah, welcome aboard because, welcome aboard because, yeah, here we are.
You need like the same sort of like white brain drain and quality drain in their circles because you don't get any benefits from being white. You get the reverse, right? You're disadvantaged. There's no place for you over there.
Right. Right. And that's effectively what this guy's complaint was. He's like, I'm effectively being told just because I'm white, I just can't be a part of any of this stuff. And I was like, yeah, dude, that. And frankly, we predicted that that would happen. And it wasn't even as bad back then. This was like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even as bad back then as it is now. So yeah. It actually has alienated a lot of these white activists, this perpetual.
I mean, that's pretty much the entire reason we exist is because of this trend over time.
Yes.
Like, hey, if you didn't shit on white people, we probably wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have a complaint.
Oh, yeah. We would probably still be arguing over a stupid political esoterica like that didn't matter. Like how many, you know, how much aggression does it take to build a road? How many aggressions do they have? Libertarians should come up with like an idea of a UTIL, like an aggression point, like an like a unit of aggression. Like, oh, you've coerced me with 600 aggressals. I don't know. That's yeah, something like that. Anyway, like a UTIL for
agitations.
Aggression. Yeah,
one agitation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, but I don't know. That stuff also probably would have stopped. We stopped arguing about that because we were kind of already like, yeah, this is actually really dumb. We probably would have spent more time just making fun of that. But yeah, it just became glaringly obvious that race was actually the defining issue, not all this other dumb shit that people were talking about in like the aughts. Aughts were like the heyday of libertarianism. It's dead now. Jews are trying to bring it back, but they can't do anything. They can't do anything on the right without like racism or like secret Nazis being involved, as we've seen with both mm-hmm. Pedro and now Richard Hanania as well. It turns out
I was talking with Straker about this, and they can't. The right falls into two categories. Either they prop something new up and they get secret racists in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they prop something else up and they get perverts in it. And these two things are the only camps of people they can ever get to build the racist, these new coalitions.
The racist pervert dichotomy. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's true. It's like if you want it to be something edgy and cool and like interesting to younger intellectual right wingers, like, yeah, there's going to be anti-Semitism and racism. It's just it is. Yeah. It's just not.
You can't avoid it.
You cannot. And frankly, Jews can't credibly be leaders of any kind of anything. I mean, they have to. They have like like for the boomers, for the boomer conservatives, it's totally, it's all Jews. Everything is Jewish. Every, almost, like, there's only a few non-Jewish pundits, like Sean Hannity and like a few others, but they're just completely controlled by Jewish companies. But like the actual people setting the agenda, they're all Jews, all of them. It's so tightly controlled by Jews. But when you get to people younger than, like, I would even say younger than like 60 at this point.
It's definitely everyone under 45, I'd say.
Yes.
Anyone who has a lot of life left to live.
Right.
And is just somewhat like, future oriented.
A Jew is just not going to have the credibility to be like Ben Shapiro himself, I believe, is probably what, in his 40s or something like that. But he does not speak to young people. His audience are boomers. Mm-hmm. His audience are dumb, older conservatives, like set in their ways. People that still think like ranting about socialism is the relevant issue. You know, Marxist NASCAR, people that are angry at people who can't formulate that, like, what's going on, that NASCAR is anti-white, it's not Marxist.
The people who are talking about Hunter Biden's hoo-ha, his penis.
Even, like, they're not even really, the funny thing is how little even they can get those people on that shit. Like, you don't see that, like, they are more interested in, like, that's not, it's very interesting. They couldn't really get them, that's something that's purely media-driven. Like, they're more interested in just, like, complaining about, like, gas prices and I don't know. Like, I don't really see any organic people, any organic grassroots support or
– I've encountered a few. No, just a few. I mean, it's
– But these are, like, perennial TV watchers, though, right? These are people that
– Well, one of them was a diehard, like, everyday Ben Shapiro listener.
Right.
And the other one was a really old Fox News boomer.
Right.
I mean, so yes, these are people who are completely plugged into a media complex, but they do exist. I agree with you. They exist in small amounts, but encountering them in the wild is it's really wild.
It's very strange. Yeah.
I was taken aback.
Sad, but yeah, but it makes you realize then it makes you wonder how often you encounter people in the wild who actually have views similar to ours or adjacent to ours and are just keeping their mouths shut and just like not talking about it. Probably more often than you'd think.
Well, it's a ton. I've written 4 articles for my Substack on that, just looking at public opinion, and it's literally tens of millions of people.
Yeah. So let's go over that. Like, can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me get the really good one.
Sorry to put you on the spot, but
no, that's fine. I wrote them. I wrote them.
You should be able to remember him. Just to pull that out of his brainal cavity.
Well, there are so many damn percentages. So many percentage points right, here.
Now he's spamming us with links. This is what he's got here.
This is an audio format show.
Point being, you know, I was looking at this. About 40% of white Americans are convinced the Great Replacement is real. You have about 54%. About 54% of the population of the, you know, believes it's being done for political purposes.
Yeah, which means there are people that are sort of convinced by the idea, probably because it seems plausible at first that this is for like the Democrat Party or something like that. The problem
that was actually interesting. There was a fantastic poll done by YouGov about the language that people use to communicate modern political ideas.
Yeah.
And people who watch MSNBC or CNN had better use of and knowledge of these modern terms, the Great Replacement Theory, trans issues, that whole thing.
That's funny. So the libtards that are being trained to be against it are better able to articulate it. Yeah, that's funny.
But people who watch Fox News aren't introduced to these terms. Only 36% of Fox News audience knows this terminology, as opposed to 63% of MSNBC. So there's also a sort of a control factor here where Fox News, that's
absolutely on purpose.
Fox News deliberately avoids using these terms because when they use the terms, over 60% of their audience automatically onboards it. They go, oh yeah, that's pretty, you know, that explains the world.
Yes.
So they deliberately avoid using the terminology while Rachel Maddow and whatever other idiots are still on MSNBC are screaming about them all day long.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, so they're basically trying to associate it only with like negativity, like only a negative association with it, and the idea of it being a conspiracy theory. So the people that think about it at all are like, it's a conspiracy theory. Of course, they verify that it's real all the time, and as we say, it's always like first they deny it, and when you say, when
it was just that Hill article where they went over it.
Yeah,
Warren and I talked about it yesterday. That article was infuriating.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's they deny it and then they justify it when they can't deny it. And they say, yeah, well, it should happen. It's like,
so they did that in that Hill article. Yeah. They had one paragraph used the word myth, and then the very next paragraph said, well, Americans have anxiety about this transition, and it's happening anyway. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Right.
Is the transition happening anyway, and is it causing anxiety, or is it a myth?
Well, here's my thing. Here's the way I think that they're trying to square that. Is for them, they say the idea that it's being done deliberately. Right, that's the part that they are saying is the myth, I think. Or that's what they would say if they were confronted with this contradiction. It's like, yeah, it's happening, but it's not being done deliberately. It's just sort of happening.
They presented it as a natural occurrence.
Well, my answer to that is, okay, then you don't mind if it just naturally reverses. Or, since it's not a policy, then we could put in a policy that would change it or reverse the trend. And you would
that's
be okay
the argument
with that,
I made
right?
on Telegram.
Because it's not a policy, right? There's no policy. There's no drive from the top people in this country. So if, say, the democratic will of white people in this country decided they wanted policies to protect their majority, you wouldn't have a problem with that because there's no policy otherwise, right?
Well, hold
if,
on
if it's
there,
not
a,
if, they're, if we're not being deliberately replaced, then you have no problem with us taking steps to reverse this natural trend that you say is happening. Just like, you know, if we see that our carbon emissions are creating climate change, we've all put catalytic converters in our car.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we just want to change this trend. It wasn't done on purpose. It just started happening. Kind of an emergent phenomenon. We didn't realize it. Oh, look, here's a problem. Now we're going to put in place a policy to reverse it, right? Now we're going to do the Clean Air Act. We did some pollution. It was a mistake. Let's clean it up. You would have no problem with that, right? We've done some racial pollution. It was an error. It just sort of happened. We weren't paying attention. This boom, wow, it came out of nowhere. So now let's reverse it. Let's switch it up and go back to a white majority. How about that? Is that okay? Would you be fine with that? Or would you vehemently oppose that and try and destroy the life of anyone that wanted to do that? So it is a fucking policy. Because if you have people who are out here advocating, as is their birthright in this country, to speak and advocate politically for democratic change, and you just try and destroy them because they are advocating for this one kind of policy, well, then effectively it is a policy. And it seems like it's the most important one. Because this is the most important type of person for you to suppress. The fact that you consider white racists the most important group for you to suppress indicates to me that destroying white people is your number one policy, your most important goal. I don't see any other logical way to explain any of this. So there it is. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You can't. There's no case to be made that it's not deliberate policy making, and there's no case to be made that the way the criminal justice system and the Justice Department and the FBI handle political dissent in the current era isn't
a
direct result of trying
white
to
people. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is. The only thing they care about is white racialism. That's it. They do not give a shit about rampant black crime and murder. I mean, they're actively trying to destroy every functional community left in this country, even the semi-functional ones, even the quasi-functional ones, being destroyed. So yeah, I mean that's why like they can't win that argument. And just like, you know, also this idea that like it's a conspiracy theory that like Jews are in charge of things. It's like, bro, listen to yesterday's Stryker, Mike, and read Stryker's article on the Kagan family and tell me Jews aren't running things. Get the fuck out of here. You have like four fucking Jews from one family that run all of U.S. foreign policy. Just get the fuck out of here. Just get out of here. Just stop it with that. How do you explain that? How do you explain that these four fucking chubby kikes run every single foreign policy plank of this country's foreign policy stance? How do you explain that? Literally, four fat Jews in New York City are running everything. How do you explain that? Actually, one of them, the Kimberly Kagan, isn't fat. The rest of them are.
They just have a just have a high IQ, Mike. They're well accomplished.
So what?
just making the counter argument.
No, you know? I know. But I mean, I'm just saying. But so what? Like, there's lots of high IQ and well accomplished white people that are knowledgeable about world affairs. How come they have like almost no input? How come it's like literally up to these four kikes? Who are they? What's so great about them? Why do they have some? Like, I can't think of a policy they've advocated that hasn't ended in an absolute fucking disaster. So where is this? That's the other thing. What's going on? Well, the fact is that this is just a Jewish oligarchy. And this one particular clique of Jews, this one particular network of, it's the Kagan family and a few others, like the Podhoretz family, the Crystal family, David Horowitz. Although I don't know if he has a, an heir the way the other ones do. I don't know if he has a son who's like taking up the mantle the way the other ones did. But you have like three or four Jewish families, and the Kagan family being the most prominent right now, that are running all this. How do you explain that? How can that be explained? I want somebody who tells me I'm a conspiracy theorist to explain this to me. Explain how this just is not, would just happen. There's no Jewish power element here. This is just, you know, what I need an explanation. Because otherwise I'm going to assume that this is some kind of Jewish conspiracy, frankly.
Oh boy.
The Blinken family also have, several of them are also in government. Anthony Blinken himself, his wife, his uncle was an ambassador.
Yeah, and they're proteges of the Kagan. They're like Kagan family clients. You know how you have like the...
Oh yeah, there
client.
You go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're basically, they're all in it together. I mean, there's an internal hierarchy, and I'm like, the Kagans are at the top, which is funny because Nuland is technically the second in command of the State Department. She's really the boss, but like she's been the boss before they gave her an official position. Even before, that's a funny thing. Even before she actually had a job at the State Department, she was just constantly consulting with Anthony Blinken. Why? She's not working for the State Department. What the fuck is she talking to the Secretary of State all the time for? Oh, well, just, because.
Right.
She's just smart.
Just checking up.
Friendly consultations.
Yeah, what was her job before she was the Undersecretary of State? Like, she
oh,
had
God,
some
she's
job.
Had she's had tons.
She's had been a ton,
in,
yeah. But.
She was in the Clinton administration. She worked for Cheney. Obama, she was deeply involved with Maidan in Ukraine. I mean, at least half a dozen various.
What's funny is I'm wondering like
positions.
How often she has been doing this shit without actually having any like official government title, like just being technically a civilian and still just like all in the mix with this shit. Probably happened.
I mean, there was a gap between 08 and 11, and then it looks like before 2005. She worked for the government, but as a civil servant rather than an appointed diplomat. How yet she was still deeply involved in affairs with the Soviet Union. I mean, she deputy foreign policy advisor to Dick Cheney. I mean, so she's been around since the mid 1980s.
Yeah, all these fucking foreign policy advisors in the Bush administration were all kikes, all of them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Every single fucking one.
She graduated from Brown University in 83 and essentially went right into foreign policy work with the highest level.
Right.
Yeah, her Strobe Talbot, for Christ's sake. I mean, she went immediately to work.
Right. So she's right
fresh
away,
out of college.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah. She's not the only one. I mean, that whole family. So, yeah.
Speaking of Brown University, I guess we should probably talk about this case because this may be one of the first times this happened in America that I can remember recently. Do you remember on a show, it's been many years now, we talked about a case that happened in the UK where there was a Pajit obstetrician who was delivering a baby and pulled the head off the baby?
Yes.
Remember
I
that?
Vaguely remember this, yes.
Well, we have that in the United States now. There was a case in Georgia. Looks like a fat negress was having a vaginal delivery. And as I will read here, this gets a little bit gross. During the attempted delivery, the baby did not properly descend due to shoulder dystocia, a condition when a baby's shoulders become stuck in the vaginal canal, the lawsuit says. The physician failed to practice according to medical standards. The doctor grossly and negligently applied excessive traction on the head and neck of the baby and failed to do a cesarean section timely and proper manner, blah, blah, blah. So it sounds to me, because they go on to say, during the viewing, the baby was wrapped tightly in a blanket with his head propped up on top of his body in manner such that the viewing him could not identify that he'd been decapitated. But it sounds like probably the C-spine was separated, but the neck skin was still there.
Oh, my God, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my, Alex. Ooh. Could have gone my whole life without needing to know that.
Now, it sounds like this legal complaint is legit, because the family is making these allegations, but it says on Thursday, the Clayton County Medical Examiner told CNN in a statement this office is calling on state officials to investigate the incident. Byer said his office has contacted the Georgia Composite Medical Board and requested that they also investigate three doctors' roles in this incident. They've notified the State Board of Nursing, so it sounds like some shit actually did go down. I think I have a photo here somewhere that may explain a bit of this. It's not a photo of anything graphic.
Thank God.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
I guess it's graphic technically in a different kind of way, but
we'll just
Oh,
no, should it's sort of explain what may have happened here.
Oh, okay. Let's
we got a black female obstetrician, so
All right, let's. This website isn't loading, but yeah. Oh God.
Yeah.
So this woman. So it was a black baby, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Now everybody involved here was black, so don't feel too bad.
Well, I mean, that's their problem. Right, it's their problem. I mean, if it was a white baby, she would have just hit it with a folding chair.
My God.
We're essentially transitioning back into a position in America. And maybe we never fully left this particular scenario where you just want to avoid hospitals at all costs, because chances are it's going to be worse for you to go to a medical facility than to just deal with the issues yourself.
Depending on how bad it is, yeah. I would also say, seriously, white people, and people listening to this program know it, but if you're like a libtard or an anarchist or even an FBI agent that is like rage listening or listening because you work for some intelligence agency or something, don't use a black doctor. Or if you're an FBI agent, definitely do use a black doctor. There is a significant risk. Like, there is a significant non-zero, non-trivial risk of, like, you getting seriously fucked up.
So, yeah. I'm telling you, the proper position is medical nihilism. You should look at the medical institution and say, well, probably at this point in time, it is increasing mortality rates. It's probably not decreasing mortality rates. It's probably the reverse.
What I would say is you need to be completely, coldly rational in your own self-interest when dealing with the medical establishment. You need to make the best possible risk-benefit calculation you can make. There are sometimes, like, I had to have surgery. If I didn't have surgery, I would have lost the use of my legs. So I had the surgery. And it worked. I got in early. I got in, frankly, in the nick of time, before a black person murdered the talented surgeon that did the surgery for me.
Right, right.
Yeah, because that could happen any day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes you have to cross a minefield. You just have to cross a minefield. Like, it may happen. You may find yourself in a position
where I did a significant amount of looking before I decided on a surgeon. Let's just
I recall there were mines that were dodged.
Yes, yes. I don't want to go into all that because it's possibly too.
That's how you should look at it.
Yeah.
As a potential victim of the system, is if you have to engage with it, you've got to be conscious that they will fuck you somehow. You might get a black nurse, black doctor, something like that. You will be dodging mines.
Yeah.
It's going to be dangerous.
Yeah.
This is not a system you can just blindly trust.
You can't just put your faith in it. Yeah, you have to be on your toes, so to speak, at all times. You have to be aware of what's going on, and you have to make sure that you are very selective in your in providers. Frankly, yeah, you can't assume just because somebody has a medical degree, they know what the hell they're doing.
You need to be suspicious of everything they tell you, everything they suggest to you. You need to double check it. You're going to have to do homework on it.
Yeah.
Even with white doctors, sorry to say, you're still going to have to go behind them and make sure that what they're telling you is accurate, because a lot of times it's just not going to be accurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's blacks, fucking forget about it. Just forget about it.
Yeah, someday I'll tell the whole story of what happened to me, but I'm not going to do that yet. It's still too fresh. and it's also just too, it's a little bit too
personal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
If it's blacks, it's like literally just fucking spin on your heel and go right out the door.
Yeah, just find or just like look up the practice before you go and see. And usually they'll have pictures of the doctors and they'll have their credentials and stuff. Just find one that you feel that you can trust. I did that.
Yeah, and the sad thing is all of these inner-city hospitals, that's increasingly where the care is concentrated, is within cities.
Yeah.
Smaller hospitals in rural areas, they're mostly white, they're shutting down. Everything's getting concentrated in the cities where you've got all the niggers working. All the fucking niggers working in the city.
Dude, the hospital I was at,
yeah,
wasn't a big city, but it was in a smaller regional city, and therefore it was okay. But the amount of like old white people being cared for by younger, like non, I was actually surprised at how white it really was. And that's just an artifact of this particular area. But still, almost all the patients were older white people.
Mm-hmm.
And the nursing staff was, and the doctors were mostly white people too, but the nursing staff was significantly diverse.
I mean, the way that people used to perceive the hospitals is that's where you go to die, and that's what we're quickly going back to is, oh, shit, you're in a hospital. Well, it's been nice knowing you. Now you're going to get killed by some Negro.
Yeah, that's actually, now that I think about it, that's pretty accurate. Whenever I hear anyone's in the hospital now, I'm like, uh-oh. If they're on the way out.
Well, also, people opt to get the hell out as soon as they can.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no one wants to convalesce there. Like, the day that they...
Like, yeah, right.
No one can afford to convalesce there.
Dude, leaving the hospital, like, for me, leaving the hospital was, like, excruciatingly painful, but I did it anyway. Like, just moving, like, at those first couple weeks was just, like, incredibly painful. Like, just... But I was like, nah, I'm getting the fuck... I don't want to spend another night here. Get me out. Take me home. Like, just getting out of the wheelchair and into the car, that was a fucking ordeal, but did it. Worth it.
I saw some back chatter from people talking about their experiences working in the nursing field and being a travel nurse going to various hospitals. And they were saying that
stories, yeah.
Yeah, because we have, or at least I know a number of these people. And it's like one of the trends seems to be that if you go into one of these inner city hospitals to work, all of the black nurses tend to call out, and they also have this tendency to kind of gang up on the white employees and get them in trouble, or even just jump them in the parking lot. That's the thing that occasionally happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. That's the other thing. You won't even have any camaraderie amongst your own profession. There won't even be like a sisterhood of nurses. It's like, no, the nigger nurses are going to try and get you in trouble for racism if you're a white nurse.
Yeah. Yeah, no, just
I mean, they have to try to get you in trouble because they're going to have a million patient complaints against them. So they have to obfuscate and project.
Yeah. I mean, but increasingly they blame the patient. If you have a black provider and you complain,
that's true.
You're just accused of being a racist.
Yeah, because the objective is not medical care. It's taking care of making black people feel good about themselves.
There's a social. There's a higher objective in every single. This is what they call, neo-reactionists call this convergence. Every single institution has a higher objective than its stated purpose on the surface, mm-hmm. and that is Jewish race theory enacted in real life. So yeah.
The other thing is, like, all of these white medical providers are essentially a scarce resource that is dwindling and has not been renewed. So that capital is being burned, it's being spent.
And it won't be renewed.
Yeah.
Well, they drop out of the field. You and I talked about this on By the Numbers before, Alex. You know, and I'm really curious about the reason for this, but female doctors, especially white female doctors, 43% of them leave after 6 years. And most of the other ones go on part-time work. And I have to believe that is more related to being unable to deal with a horrible work environment than anything else.
I mean, given the amount of pay and the amount of time it takes to get into that profession, that's a pretty staggering statistic. Like about half your employees leave despite usually making good money and spending 7 years getting into that profession.
Yeah. And it's within 6 years, they're gone. And I have to believe that is related to a completely unworkable environment. You know, male doctors, it's only about 3% in the study I saw. But they're generally surgeons. They come in, do a surgery, and they leave. Female doctors are generally, general practitioners. They have to be there and deal with it all day. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that social environment.
Wanted a woman surgeon either, frankly.
Well, I can't blame you. But
I would have preferred a white woman to like a black man, but yeah, white man's the best you can get.
I don't usually see them in surgical specialties.
Like
they don't. Women, it's less than 17%.
Women don't deal with pressure that well. That's one thing. I am not a sexist, but I am a sex realist, if you will. And women and high pressure situations, they don't like it. They don't.
Well,
like it
see
yeah,
the
men are much better handlers of that. And that's just
the flip side of surgical specialties. Here's what's actually kind of happening there is it selects for sociopaths, for people who have like zero emotion, no empathy whatsoever. They're just kind of perfectionists. Wait a minute. That sounds like somebody I know. Anyway.
That wasn't actually the impression I got from the guy that did mine, but he might have been so sociopathic. He may have just been a very good bedside man.
Or he may have just been a decent surgeon. He's like, no, I'm not like the other fucking homicidal maniacs in my profession.
He was nice. He was really nice. He seemed compassionate, and he was very good at what he did. So, you know, I got lucky. I got lucky in finding him and being able
psychological
to get, get an appointment with him. I mean, dude, I recommended him to somebody else, and they're like, I can't get this guy's office to fucking set me up. And I was like, dude, I don't know how I did it. Like, but yeah, anyway.
Oh, yeah, specialist card.
That was my experience with the dentist recently. It was like, wow, that was a really good dentist. He did follow up, like fucking calls me to see how things are going. I'm like, I've never had that happen before. And the dude's in high demand, and it's like, what's going to happen when this guy goes away?
Well, yeah. It's amazing how happy we get when we get a quality service, because you also know you'll probably never get it again.
Yeah, and right.
You desperately don't want this guy to resign or retire. It's like,
yeah, it's like, what do I have to do to keep this dude around? I mean, if my kids need services, they need somebody like this. I'm gonna be like, they're gonna treat me exactly, you know, the same opinion that I have of boomers, of like, you didn't know how good you had it. Like, actually, I did.
Well, the thing is, we did. They won't be able to say that because, like, no, we did, and we tried our best. You know, we were fighting.
No, I was very aware.
Fighting this
I'm 24.
Battle.
I'll never know.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing is, like, this, you know, eventually, as we said, the collapse of this country is effectively, it's already happening. Collapse is not Mad Max Thunderdome shit. Collapse is shit just gets shittier and shittier.
Oh, yeah. And shittier. Read an article the other day.
Services just stop working. Trains stop running, planes start dropping out of the sky, and that's just going
literally.
To happen. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be we are being conditioned by the kinds of economic conditions that they are imposing on us to expect to live in a society that just has the fact that you cannot count on consistent services, and also you cannot count on public safety, you cannot count on police, you cannot count on the lights being on, you can't count on being able to get a good doctor, you can't count on public transportation, you can't count on roads. It's not that it's not going to be there. It'll be there. It'll just be shitty. And you'll just have to put up with all of this crap, and everything will become a chore, a grind. Everything will be something that causes worry. Like, I, as much worry in my case, when I was seeking medical assistance for my back injury, was as much of it was taken up with racial issues as it was with the actual medical issue. I couldn't just say, okay, I've got this medical issue. I can put myself in the hands of talented people. I had to be very active in seeking things out, right? And that's increasingly going to be like that. So what
increasingly you are just living in a third world country. I mean, there are large portions of the United States are now third world. You've got doctors pulling heads off babies and delivery units like it's third.
We have
shit.
Significant portions of America that are basically just like Africa or Haiti.
I get anxiety when I fly now because of, I don't know if you've seen the nearly exponential increase in near accidents on runways and at airports. There was just one in Houston where some black guy, he was an air traffic controller, told one plane to take off at the same time the other was landing, and a cataclysmic accident was only avoided because the guys in the UPS plane landing realized it and issued a direct order to the guys of the other plane to stop taking off. They missed each other by like 7 feet. And these near accidents are happening almost monthly in the U.S. now.
And remember, for a long time, since the 90s, really, since Flight 800, America had like a 20-year period with a stellar air safety record.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
I thought that was because the FAA had reduced their standards at one point. You had some accidents, near misses, and now they're doing it again.
They have. They have a big they have a big diversity inclusion.
So you're going to see,
and it's going to get worse. Just see this play out. The point is that the amazing thing is, since the 90s, notwithstanding 9/11, of course, which was a terrorist attack, you know, by the Jews. But notwithstanding that, the air safety record of like not having accidents or crashes or collisions or things like that was like a 20-year period where we just didn't really have any.
It's been stellar for a long time.
It's been really fucking good, and that is going to go away. That's another thing that's just
going
to go away. We're going to have air disasters become semi-regular occurrences now. Airplane disasters, where just all the passengers on a plane just die.
Everything being delayed is already normal. Every time I've flown for the last 2 years, delay, cancellation. It's your job to seek someone out to reschedule. I was just on a flight. We had to circle the air. It took us an hour to get out. Because the airport was total chaos taking off, and it took us an hour to land at the next one because it was total chaos. Flying is a total crapshoot now, and it's not going to get better.
No, it's only going to get worse. And before we go to the next hour, I'm going to play the Merchant Minute. I was supposed to do this from last. This is supposed to be from last show. So Mark theoretically is going to have another bit for us. But he messaged me after the last show. He's like, "You forgot it." I was like, "Oh, damn, I forgot it." So here's the Merchant Minute. This one is from this one was supposed to be played Wednesday, and we'll probably have another Mark bit for next hour, hopefully.
This is the Merchant Minute. From JTA.org, soon after Cardi B learned that police in Las Vegas would not charge her in connection with an incident at a recent concert, she turned to Wikipedia. The rapper tweeted a picture that illustrates the Digital Encyclopedia's entry for Jewish religious clothing. The picture shows two Hasidic Orthodox Jewish men walking in Borough Park, Brooklyn. One wears a fur hat called a strimal, as well as a tallit, a prayer shawl, over his clothes. The other has long peyos, the side locks worn by some Orthodox men. "Remember," she wrote. Fans immediately connected the post to a lyric in her 2018 song, Bickenheld, in which she sings, "Lawyer is a Jew, he gon' chew up all the charges." Jewish lawyers are a sustained theme in rap music, and Cardi B's legal team on the Las Vegas incident included multiple Jewish attorneys. Literally everyone knows who actually runs this country. Even a retarded Dominican slut knows. If you're not talking about Jews in 2023, you're just a coward and a faggot. But even as some interpreted the tweet as praise for her Jewish lawyers, others decried it as offensive because Cardi B appeared to attribute her attorney's success to their Jewish identity, not their skills. Well, that's because that's the reality. "Lawyer is a Jew" continued trending on Twitter for some time. And from the Jerusalem Post, actor and musician Jamie Foxx wrote a post on Instagram Friday saying, "They killed this dude named Jesus. What do you think they'll do to you?" Followed by the hashtags fake friends and fake love. This is not necessarily anti-Semitic. In fact, I already know what this is. It's not anti-Semitic at all. Based on the hashtags, he's probably saying Judas and to a lesser extent Peter were fake friends to Jesus, and analogizing that to some bullshit that happened in his personal life, because that's what niggers do shit like this. Niggers post shit like this all the fucking time. The actor later deleted the post, but not before being accused of anti-Semitism on social media, as much of the anti-Semitism aimed at Jews has been the result of the belief that Jews are responsible for Jesus' death, as the New Testament tells that Jesus was caught and crucified after being betrayed by Judas. Fellow actress Jennifer Aniston, who liked Fox's post before it was deleted, later wrote an Instagram story that, "This really makes me sick. I did not like this post on purpose or by accident. And more importantly, I want to be clear to my friends and anyone hurt by this showing up in their feeds. I do not support any form of anti-Semitism, and I truly don't tolerate hate of any kind, period." Maybe you'll get cast as a grandmother in an upcoming film if you suck Jewish dicks hard enough, Jennifer. Aniston shared the post made by Jewish news site A Wider Frame onto her Instagram story, which featured a screenshot of Fox's post in which it can be seen that Aniston had liked it before it was taken down. Later on Saturday, Fox posted an apology, utterly buckbroken by his Semitic masters.
"I want to apologize to the Jewish community and everyone who was offended by my post," he wrote on Instagram. "I now know my choice of words has caused offense, and I'm sorry. That was never my intent."
Hey, Jamie, these Jews, they have really white skin. Their skin's so white.
Why are you apologizing to these people who look white, Jamie? Doesn't that piss you off? Don't you feel like a broken buck, Jamie? Fox went on to claim that by they, he was referring to a fake friend who had betrayed him. Yeah, that's what I thought. Teenagers post shit like this all the time about their retarded social circles, and niggers do too, because they're mentally and socially teenagers.
I only have love in my heart for everyone. I love and support the Jewish community. My deepest apologies to anyone who was offended.
You a bitch, nigga. And by the way, the show Friends fucking sucks. And from Forward.com,
Ghislaine Maxwell,
the British socialite who was sentenced to 20 years in prison for her role in
Jeffrey Epstein's
sex abuse ring, is receiving services from a non-profit that supports Jewish prisoners. Maxwell, whose father was Jewish, did not publicly identify as Jewish previously and is not considered Jewish under traditional Jewish law. The news was first reported by The Sun, a British newspaper, which said that Maxwell has been rewarded with better food and more time off work. Well, that's not right. Work makes you free, Ghislaine. Don't you want to be free? U.S. prisons are obligated to honor inmates' religious obligations in most cases, meaning that Jews are often given access to kosher food, prayer supplies, and changes in work schedules to account for Shabbat and holidays. Prisons also offer services based on inmates' self-identified religions, although chaplains may be asked to certify whether inmates hold sincere religious beliefs. Certification requirements have faced legal challenges. Sometimes the services are provided by non-profit groups, even when the prisons employ religious chaplains of their own. The non-profit that is providing services to Maxwell at the Federal Correctional Institute in Florida is called Reaching Out, according to The Sun. It is one of several organizations operated by people affiliated with the Chabad-Lubavitch movement to serve those who are incarcerated. Another, the Aleph Institute, supports prisoners with not only their religious needs while incarcerated, but also in seeking clemency or parole. Because it's way too hard for Jews in the American legal system. They definitely need some special organizations to give them privileges no one else has. Chabad is one of the most extensive purveyors of services to Jewish prisoners across the United States, in keeping with its mission to bring as many Jews as possible closer to their religion, the practice of which will be banned in America when we take power and abolish the Supreme Court.
We're not helping them get out of prison. We're helping them spiritually, to bring them to a state of mind which, had they had exposure to, maybe they wouldn't have done what they did. Rabbi Zvi Boyarsky,
now an Aleph Institute director, told the Jewish Telegraphic Agency in 2009. No, I think the child-fucking Jews and financial criminal Jews would do it all over again the same way if they could. I mean, the same way minus getting caught, you know? Other organizations supporting Jewish prisoners include Jewish Prisoner Services International, founded in 1984 by B'nai B'rith, and a newer group, Matir Asurim, founded by rabbis affiliated with Reconstructing Judaism. Its name comes from the prayer thanking God for setting free those who are imprisoned. While the exact number of prisoners who identify as Jewish is unknown, the number appears to have risen over time. That number played a part in deliberations over sentencing for the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter, condemned to death last week. A chaplain working in the New York State prison system told JTA in 2009 that the rise reflected a growing sense that Jewish prisoners had access to more perks. Because they do. And if you start cutting off all the fakers from those benefits, people in prisons will start attacking Jews, rightfully, for their unearned privileges. There are nigger rappers in prison who have cynically converted to Judaism just to work less and avoid shitty prison cafeteria food. And Jews, you're just gonna have to put up with that.
You gotta deal with it! I'm a nigger Jew! You gotta deal with it!
Enjoy your retarded demon religion, newly filled with nigger rappers in prisons! One of those Jewish perks is kosher food, which a man incarcerated in Washington State praised in a 2021 JTA essay as good, a rarity in prison. It has not always been available. In the 1980s, a Texas prison canceled its kosher food option, saying that none of the prisoners using it were authentically Jewish, leading to a 1986 Supreme Court case ruling that rabbis, not prison officials, should determine who counts as Jewish. And Florida reintroduced a kosher food program in its prisons only under legal duress in 2013. In some cases, people who are incarcerated have self-identified as Jewish or even converted to access kosher food. A character on the prison drama Orange is the New Black converted for that reason, reportedly prompting inmates as far afield as Scotland to do the same. And Jewish Hollywood can never put Pandora back in that box. All the blacks know they have to become Jewish now. For therightstuff.biz, I'm Morocco, and this has been The Merchant Minute.